I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's December 3rd, and we have a lot to talk about. As some of you know, I do a fair amount of traveling to MS-related meetings, conferences, and events. And for the last few months, I've been taking a minute during the first podcast episode of each month to let you know where I'm going to be. If I'm traveling to the city where you live, or if you're going to be attending the same conference that I'm going to be attending, I hope you let me know, and maybe we can find time to grab coffee or a cocktail and talk. And since this is our first episode in December, I want to let you know that this month, I won't be going anywhere. And you probably have no idea how happy it makes me to say that. This past year, between MS research conferences, International Progressive MS Alliance meetings, my MS advocacy work, and having the opportunity to speak at various MS society events, I flew more than 100,000 miles, traveling 86 days. That's almost 3 full months out of the year. So when I look at my calendar and realize that I'll actually be staying home in Southern California for the entire month of December, it just makes me smile. And speaking about things that make me and a lot of other people smile, music is at or near the top of that list. My guest today is Stubby Pandev, and Stubby is the lead singer of Lucky Boys Confusion and The Hoodie Life. And last year, Stubby was diagnosed with MS. Then, Stubby's insurance company told him that he couldn't start the disease-modifying therapy that his neurologist had prescribed. We'll talk to Stubby about how he's managed to navigate this first year since his MS diagnosis, and we'll also talk with him about MS Sucks, Singing for a Cure, a benefit concert that's raising funds for the Accelerated Cure Project for MS. But before we get to my conversation with Stubby Pandev, there are a few other things that you should know about. Cannabidiol, or CBD, is a non-hallucinogenic compound that's derived from the cannabis plant. Today, you can find CBD in drinks, foods, oils, and, well, what seems like a near infinite list of other products. CBD-based products are so commonplace, they're sold over-the-counter at CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aid. And there's no shortage of websites and social media influencers who will loudly proclaim that CBD offers all sorts of benefits to people living with MS. Science tells us that CBD can have a positive impact on anxiety and perhaps MS-related pain. But for everything else, the jury is still out. And so far, we haven't heard much about CBD from the FDA. And because there aren't any safety regulations in place, there isn't any continuity in terms of dosing recommendations or manufacturing process. That batch of CBD oil that some guy mixed up in his basement or garage may have picked up all sorts of contamination along the way, but we as consumers have no way of knowing. Well, last week, the FDA updated its official position on CBD, saying that cannabidiol, CBD, may have the potential to harm users. This past summer, the FDA announced that it was going to be taking a closer look at CBD, and their official statement announced that, quote, CBD has the potential to harm you, and harm can happen even before you become aware of it. Well, beyond the almost generic-sounding warnings of drowsiness, gastrointestinal distress, and changes in mood, the FDA went on to point out that CBD can cause liver injury, it can affect other drugs, and with alcohol or other depressants, can increase the risk of sedation. The FDA reminded us that there are still many aspects about CBD that remain unknown, such as the effects of taking CBD daily for extended periods, the effects of CBD on the developing brain, or how CBD interacts with herbs and botanicals. The FDA also warned 15 U.S. companies that they were illegally selling products that contained CBD. Now, I know how interested a lot of you are in cannabis-based treatments for different MS symptoms, and I'm not trying to be a Donnie Downer here. But if you're a longtime listener, you know that I've always stressed the importance of being an informed medical consumer. I believe that's true whether you're evaluating a treatment at a hospital or a treatment that you're buying over the counter at the corner drugstore. And that means that if you're making responsible decisions when it comes to treating your MS symptoms, you'll factor in this latest information from the FDA along with the other credible information about CBD that you collect. While we're on the subject of warnings and announcements, this past week, two leading neurologists from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Partners MS Center at Harvard University, Dr. Howard Weiner and Dr. James Stankiewicz, published their warning or announcement that it's time for neurologists to rethink how they determine the best treatment for people living with MS. Most of the time, one of two different treatment paradigms are used in treating MS. The escalation approach dictates that you start someone with a less powerful but very safe disease-modifying therapy. This would be a drug that's well-tolerated with few side effects. And if that drug doesn't work, you gradually move up to a more powerful drug that may carry with it the possibility of greater side effects, so you escalate the treatment as needed. The other treatment paradigm is called induction, and the induction approach dictates that you start with the most effective drug possible. Well, Dr. Weiner and Dr. Stankiewicz, who are both highly regarded neurologists, have published a paper that states that the amount of damage to the brain that MS causes is underappreciated, and the impact of this damage on patient function is underestimated. The doctors remind us that the treatment landscape has significantly shifted with the approval of 10 new medications over the past decade, and today there are approved medications available that work better, that provide a better therapeutic effect without compromising safety. And the two doctors suggest that it's time to put the escalation method aside and that initiating higher efficacy treatments early is the best way to achieve the best possible outcomes for people living with MS. And I'll repeat what I said just a minute ago about how important it is to be an informed medical consumer. This is the kind of information that enables you to be a real partner in your own treatment and allows you to have an important conversation at your next appointment with your neurologist. If you'd like to get up to speed a bit more about the escalation and induction treatment philosophies, I had a great conversation with Dr. Aaron Boster in episode 74 of Real Talk MS, and you can listen to that episode by visiting realtalkms.com/74. And I'll include a link to that podcast episode along with Dr. Weiner and Dr. Stankiewicz's report in today's show notes. Over the past year, we've talked a lot about what feels like the constantly increasing price of MS disease-modifying therapy. About 3 months ago, we talked about a study that showed that between the years 2006 and 2016, the cost of MS medication for Medicare patients increased sevenfold, increasing the out-of-pocket expense for Medicare patients from $372 per 1,000 beneficiaries to $2,673 per 1,000 beneficiaries. And the total Medicare price tag for MS medications has increased from $19 million in 2006 to almost $150 million. In 2016. And this is all in spite of the fact that we have so many more MS drugs on the market today than we did just 10 years ago. Just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the drug Tecfidera, an oral disease-modifying therapy for relapsing MS. When Tecfidera received FDA approval in 2013, the wholesale cost per year was $54,750. Today, and we're just 6 years later, the cost of Tecfidera is $94,991 per year. I mean, this seemingly makes no sense. And so researchers at Oregon State University wanted to better understand why the cost of MS medications just continues to skyrocket. Even medications that have been on the market since the 1990s have seen their prices increase dramatically. So the research team was able to find four pharmaceutical and biotech industry executives who agreed to be interviewed as long as they could remain anonymous. Now, here's what we know about these industry executives. They each had substantial career experience. They each had leadership roles. And each were or had been directly involved in multiple sclerosis disease-modifying therapy pricing or marketing. So these were the right people to comment on the actual strategies behind the pricing of MS disease-modifying therapy. And what they said was that when a new disease-modifying therapy received FDA approval and was being made available, the pricing decision was primarily driven by the cost of other disease-modifying therapies that were already available. As one of these executives said, and I'm quoting now, "Really, what it came down to was, what is everyone else pricing, and what do we think we can get for it?" The executives shared that they couldn't charge less for a new drug because that would send a message that the drug was less effective. So the reasonable option was to charge more. One executive said that companies have been able to raise prices because nobody has pushed back or told them that they weren't able to do that. The research team also pointed out that, and I'm quoting from their report now, "The pharmaceutical industry often commonly justifies the need for high U.S.-based drug prices as a necessity to both recoup research and development costs and to incentivize high-risk future innovation." But a recent analysis of 15 top pharmaceutical companies, and again I'm quoting, found that revenue derived solely from the drug price premium paid in the United States was sufficient to cover 163% of their global research and development expenditures. The executives pointed out that in the rest of the world, you can't really increase the cost of the same drug. Over time, prices actually decline. It's only in the United States that this phenomenon seems to occur. Well, this study validates some long-held suspicions about drug pricing in the United States. My own feeling is that demanding lower prices is less important than demanding a much higher level of transparency when it comes to setting those prices. I believe that sunlight is still the best disinfectant. And if you'd like to check out this study for yourself, I'll include a link in today's show notes. There's a lot of buzz about the effect of different diets when it comes to managing MS. And by buzz, I mean a few facts and a lot of speculation. So I want to tell you about a webinar that's being hosted by the National MS Society and Can Do MS. Next week on December 10th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, you can jump online for Debunking Diet Myths. And given the amount of online speculation, not to mention the strong opinions that people seem to have when it comes to diets and MS, this is a well-timed and an important topic. If you'd like to register for Debunking Diet Myths, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And I guess I'll repeat myself one more time today. It's all about becoming an informed medical consumer, because when it comes to making the best choices in your treatment or understanding the actual benefits of one diet over another, knowledge is power. One thing that's definitely not a myth is the upcoming MS Sucks Singing for a Cure concert on December 21st at the Bottom Lounge in Chicago. My guest today is Stubi Pandev, and Stubi is the organizer, the energy, and along with his band Lucky Boys Confusion, one of the performers behind this event. It's been 1 year since Stubi was diagnosed with MS, and his journey is going to sound familiar to some of you and surprising to others. In a moment, we'll meet Stubi Pandev. Stubi Pandev is the lead singer of Lucky Boys Confusion and The Hoodie Life, and we're talking about MS Sucks, Singing for a Cure, an upcoming concert, well, actually two concerts that's not only going to raise awareness about MS, but they're also raising funds to benefit the Accelerated Cure Project for MS. Welcome to the podcast, Stubby.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
You know, before we get to the concert, I thought we could rewind a little bit because as we're talking today, we're just a few days away from Black Friday. And I guess that last year, Black Friday was probably a difficult day for you. Can you tell me about it?
Sure. I worked half day, and I came home, and my doctor, my neurologist, was calling me, and I'd gone in for my first MRI in my brain. They found some lesions. I went through a whole bunch of tests, from blood tests to all different types of stuff to see if there was any other kind of autoimmune thing. And then they had me go back in to do the MRI. I would die. And then they found the lesion on my cervical spine, which, you know, for the people that are listening, that aren't very familiar with MS, which, you know, I assume that most people are, is that it's the least ideal place for you to have a lesion, considering how small it is. And, you know, the more the lesion moves there, the less mobility you can have going forward. So he called me and said, you know, hey, listen, this doesn't look very good. And, I said, all right, you know, doc, just shoot straight with me. You know, he's like, what are the chances that I have this? He's a really nice guy. He said 95%. He's like, there's a very, very small chance that one of these tests comes back with something else. But he's like, it's rare in the, you know, 40 years, 30 years that he's been doing it, that he saw something like this, that it wasn't MS. So that was my case. Told my wife, and I didn't give myself a chance to cry or feel bad or anything, because I had to get going. I had to work at getting myself better. My wife was 3 months pregnant at the time. I didn't really get a chance to be sad. It's just one of those things where you just have to fight right from the start. You give up and the disease takes over, right? So from that point on, I just fought to get the drug.
So you were diagnosed, you knew you had to move forward, you got your prescription for the best disease-modifying therapy that your neurologist thought would serve you well, but then your insurance company stepped in. What happened there?
Basically, they wanted me to go on cheaper other drugs. I was very vigilant about researching, and I saw that Ocrevus, which was Ocrevus or Ocrevus, however you pronounce it, depends on who you ask. I saw that almost every single case came back with very, very positive results, except for the ones that were on other drugs. So I talked to my doctor, my neurologist. I talked to other neurologists. My family has a lot of doctors in our community, and so I started talking to them. They're like, they basically said that a lot of times these drugs will kind of weaken the effect, or weaken the effect of them if you are on another drug. And so I just, you know, did the research. I'm like, no, this doesn't make sense. My doctor has, you know, prescribed me this because he thinks that this is the best drug for me. I've been paying into this insurance program for 10 years. I don't have a cold. This is serious. I need to get it. So I even got on the phone with the doctor and I said, my doctor that prescribed this drug to me is the head of neurology at Northwestern. I'm like, sir, I know you're the doctor at United Healthcare, but are you telling me that you know more about what drug I should be on than this doctor. And, you know, he said, sir, you're asking me to say something that I, you know, I'm not allowed to say. And I said, you said enough, you know. So I said, forget it. So I said, okay, this isn't it. I was thinking about loans because, you know, it is an expensive drug. But so what? I haven't paid into my insurance for years for this. That's the whole point, right? To be insurance just in case something like this horrible happens to you. So I started doing research. I started thinking about ways to raise the money. This charity show, I might have done something like this for that, ask my family or whatever. But what I ended up doing is I found the Genentech Foundation, who actually manufactures the drug. And I wrote them a letter, filled out the form, and they approved me for the drug for free. At that point in time, all I had to do was find somewhere that would infuse me. That was a struggle in itself, but I found a place that would infuse me too. A lot of the times, I just had to beg and plead the nurses to actually read my file and see how bad it was. And, you know, and this whole time, my neurologist is calling me like almost every Friday saying, are you approved yet? Are you approved yet? And I finally asked him, like, doc, do you call every one of your patients like this? You know, he's like, no, you just have a very, I'm worried about you. I have a very dangerous case. And so luckily everything kind of worked out, you know, as much as it works out when you have MS. But, you know, I've had great results. And I've had two full infusions now. So, I'm very fortunate. So, you know, that's where I was at, you know, and anybody listening, fight, don't let these, you know, too many people would have, in my situation when the insurance company said no, would have just folded their arms and said, okay, this is the hand that's been dealt to me. There's other resources out there. There's other ways to do it. You just have to fight. So, because nobody else is going to fight for you if you don't fight for yourself.
I couldn't say one word of that any better than you just did. So here we are a year later. How are you doing?
I'm good. Doesn't look like I'm. If things go the way that they think they're going to go, I should be able to walk for the rest of my life. I should be able to. You know, I'm never going to be able to run or jump again, but, hey, you know, in the 80s, this would have been a lot different of a situation, different conversation that I was going to have. So now my struggle in life is I'm in a fair amount of tightness and pain and whatnot, but I go to the gym, you know, 3-4 times a week. I just recently was able to do the Stairmaster for 10 minutes, and even when I was healthy, that was hard to do, so I'm pretty proud of myself for that. I'm able to do some, you know, body weight walking lunges, you know, and back to, you know, I've lost a fair amount of weight, and you know, I'm putting muscle back on, so I'm really happy. I'm doing well. The other thing that I've done that has changed a lot of how I feel is I've, you know, made some changes in my life to like add anti-inflammatory foods, and oh my God, but I don't have like I used to have static or constant pain. You know, right now I have to think about it to feel it, and I really honestly think that's from the changes I made in my diet. And and, you know, it's funny because you make those changes in your diet, you feel less pain, you're in a better mood, your mood's better, your MS is better, you know, so, yeah, so everything's good. I'm happy. You know, as happy as I can be with this. You know, there's some days that even go by that I forget that I'm, you know, that I have this going on. So I couldn't really ask for much more. Very fortunate, very, very lucky that this happened to me when it did.
And that brings us to a pretty amazing event, actually a two-part event that's coming up at the Bottom Lounge on December 21st in Chicago. What can you tell me about MS Sucks Singing for a Cure?
Well, once I found out that, you know, things were gonna go well for me, I wanted to just give back to the community. I know that there's a lot of people out there suffering. And one thing that especially after I announced how many people came out and they're like, oh, I've been living with this forever. I can't believe that, you know, you had the strength to come out and announce this so publicly. And to me, there was no choice. It was more of a when. And the reason why this took so long to come out is because I wanted to make sure that I was good to go. You know what I mean? I was moving forward in a positive way before I did this. So what I did is I signed up. I did some research on different charities, and I found Accelerated Cure Project out of Boston. And I wanted a charity that focused mostly on the research and cure. I know that there's a lot of other good charities out there, but I just really connected with the people there. So I set that up, and I set up a matinee show for my band, Lucky Boys Confusion. That'll be a live rock show, live and loud. And that'll be just a normal show that we're playing, but it's just a good conduit, a good gateway to for the actual charity event. So the do that matinee show that'll end at 4:30 maybe. Then upstairs they have a smaller room that's going to host a VIP event where basically just people that bought tickets to both shows, the first 200 that did, just have an event with some food and some libations are provided by some really cool breweries in Chicago, 350 and Dry Hop. Some food provided by Casa Indigo. And then at that in the evening, it's going to be kind of an amalgam of all the Chicago bands playing a couple songs each acoustic. And there'll be a comedy act. And then James Van Osdale, who's a staple of the local music scene, he'll be emceeing the whole program. And then there'll be a raffle with a whole bunch of different items. A cool charity event where the music is actually kind of the background of the event. It's more just about people coming together, just talk about that and awareness. I've reached out to some TV programs and stuff to just, even if the show's sold out, it's not really about that. It's about, you know, raising awareness and raising some money for a cure.
So what's been the response to the event so far?
Amazing. I think we have 23,000 views on the video that I posted announcing. The shows are about half sold out. So that's 1,400 tickets. It's just been amazing. You know, it's the best feeling out of all of it was that I had a woman reach out to me saying, I have history of MS in my family and I've been ignoring the symptoms that I've been feeling, and your post made me call my doctor and set up an appointment. I'm like, there's nothing that makes me feel happier than that. I mean, we need to, you know, early detection is important, and you don't get it back. That's what I said. I'm like, she's like, I just don't want to deal with it. I said, you don't deal with it, you get worse. It's very rare that you get anything back. So we want to maintain what we have left. And we want to make sure that we get the help that we need. So that was one of three people that reached out and that are getting going to their doctors and neurologists now, because I saw that, we raised thousands of dollars, sold hundreds of tickets and all that. But the thing that makes me the proudest and, you know, makes me choke up a little bit is that that I can, you know, that's making a difference in people's lives. So if it helps one person, I've done more than enough. So,
well, I think you're helping a lot more than one person. As a matter of fact, let me know, how can our listeners who are going to be in or around Chicago on December 21st get involved? Where can they find out more information?
So everything can be found at www.singingforacure.com. And for Facebook, it's the same thing as facebook.com/singingforacure. Bottomlounge.com as well. You can just go get tickets right there. If you're just looking to donate, those two links, the Singing for a Cure links, will just there's the ability to just donate funds. If you want to donate goods or services, we'll until the day before the show, we'll be accepting any kind of prizes or goods or services that you can provide for the raffle. Outside of that, reach out to me. It's the full event, msxsingingforacure@gmail.com, or just write me on the Facebook page, or, I mean, I'm easy to find, stubby@me.com. I don't even care. Email me personally. I don't care. If there's something that you want to, if you want to volunteer, if you want to just come to the show, is there anything that you want to do, or if you just want to talk about what you're going through, and sometimes a stranger or if you did grow up listening to me, somebody having an ear to vent to is good. So I'm always here. It may take me a day or two to get back to you, but I will. I'll write back everybody that writes me.
Well, I've heard that you're hoping to make this an annual event. So thanks for talking to me today. And I'm looking forward to talking with you next year when we're gearing up for MS Sucks 2020.
Absolutely. Yep. Annual thing. And, thank you so much for doing what you do and raising awareness and, helping out other people that that find it a little bit harder to get out there and talk for themselves.
This week's episode of Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. If you know someone who might enjoy listening to the podcast, you can share this episode with them by suggesting they visit realtalkms.com/118. That's realtalkms.com/118. And you'll find that link in today's show notes so that you can copy and paste it right into your email or text. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, you might want to do that today. It's free, and that way you'll never miss an episode. You can find Real Talk MS wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Pandora. Or you can visit the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. And if you have an Amazon Echo or Echo Dot at home, well, you can just say, "Alexa, enable the Real Talk MS podcast." I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.